This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stacio. The photographs of Durham-born Hugh Mangum give us a window into the early 20th century. The extraordinary photographer took pictures of all kinds of ordinary people. His clientele crossed the lines of gender, race, and class, which was unusual at the height of the Jim Crow era here in the South. Margaret Sartor and Alex Harris compiled a series of Mangum's portraits in the new book, Where We Find Ourselves, the photographs of Hugh Mangum from 1897 to 1922. They're both writers and photographers and instructors at the Center for Documentary Studies at Duke. Alex Harris is also the founder of the center, and they are both here now. Margaret and Alex, welcome back to the State of Things. Good to have you.
It's great to be here.
Margaret, tell us about Hugh Mangum.
Oh, Hugh Mangum. Well, first of all, Hugh Mangum is a native son of Durham, very much a product of Durham's history. The important Durhamites who made sure that his work was salvaged and saved in the 70s and then donated to Duke in the 80s. And then Duke was responsible for scanning the negative in the 2000s. And now Alex and I and other people are discovering his work and putting out into the public. But, first of all, Hugh Mangum, I think, was, Alex and I both think, was an American artist with a really original voice who deserves a wider audience. And he was an artist. He was outgoing. Growing up, he wanted to learn how to be an artist. There weren't many avenues for that in Durham. He actually attended Methodist Female Seminary as a boy, later attended Salem College, a women's college in Winston-Salem, to study art. And I think a lot of his views about gender and race and economic status were formed by growing up in this town and also then the education among women.
Let's hear more. I want to hear more about that because it's fascinating, and I think it tells us a lot about the kind of photographs that we see in this collection. But Alex, tell us more about his art itself. I mean, he's embracing this relatively recent technology of photography as his art. Who was he as an artist, and how did he work?
He was an itinerant portrait photographer at a time when there were permanent portrait studios in Durham and elsewhere in the South. He chose to pitch his tent here and elsewhere. So he had, in a way, that allowed him to invite a diverse clientele into his studio and perhaps avoid some of the Jim Crow laws. But as an artist, you can tell from the expressions of the people that he photographed that he was an outgoing man. He was a jokester on a good day. He had his subjects laughing and smiling. But I think even more importantly, and this is what Margaret and I were drawn to, the images where you really don't sense Mangum's presence. Mangum had an ability, and this is an important thing in portrait photography, to create the space where his subjects could give a sense of their own interior lives. And he did this without props, without fancy backdrops, without so much of that we use today in still photography.
And who's coming to him? I mean, who are his customers? He's doing this for a living. He's not being an art photographer, right? He's taking pictures and getting paid. Who's showing up at his studio?
An incredibly wide range of people from a wide range of backgrounds, and it's our idea that he became itinerant in order to attract this diversity of clients. Had he a permanent studio, he most likely would have had to rely on the elite and wealthy, as most permanent studios did. But by setting up these tents, he offered affordable pictures for almost anyone.
And the almost anyone and the everyone who appear in these pictures, as Alex, I think, suggested, reflect their own dignity. They maintain their dignity and a quality, an almost artistic view of an interior life, which in the Jim Crow South, when we look at the African-American portraits and even portraits of women that he photographed, would not have been what the newspapers were doing when they rendered an African-American, for instance. So the idea that he maintained the dignity of his subject is extraordinary, is it not?
It is extraordinary, and I haven't been able to find another evidence of another photographer who was had those people in the studio at the same time. One of the things that we know about Mangum that is unique because of the negatives he left behind, which are multiple images image negatives, where he made the most of the real estate of a negative, making affordable pictures as he did, and recorded anywhere from 2 to 30 images on a single negative, that became for us now an unintentional record on his part, but a record nonetheless of who was in his studio at the same time on the same days. So it was not even just the way he interacted with each individual client, but the atmosphere of his studio was almost like a water hole that drew everybody, welcomed everybody together into that space.
Alex, do we have a better picture of what he was thinking at the time? We certainly have a record of his work, but what he was thinking and perhaps what others made of his work in his time?
I think no one can know what Mangum thought of his own work or really know his motivations. But what we can see is the man reflected in the faces of the people he photographed. And I think what we can see now, thanks to 21st century technology that's allowed us to scan his negatives, and the Duke Library has done this to such a high resolution, is we're looking at these faces with a now in these prints we've made, with a three-dimensionality that makes them feel like 21st century people. Each one, though they were shot in black and white, when we saw these scans in color, we realized that each of the negatives, each of the people had a slightly different tonality because of the way they aged. And it makes us think when we look at them, these are individuals, these artifacts are showing us different. Each person has a slightly different tone and look.
Do we have many of the original photographs you were working, obviously, from the glass plates and the negatives? What do we have of his collection that has survived, the prints?
There are some in archives. I found them. I found many of Pauli Murray's relatives who passed through his studio in her archive at Harvard. I found identified people prints made by Mangum in the North Carolina History Archive. The prints were largely quite small because the negatives were small and they were contact prints. I think what brought me and Alex really to this project was not the idea of looking at antique portraiture, not just a window into the past, but, well, all of us are engaged right now in the idea of looking back at our cultural past and trying to see it and know it in a completely different way. When we look at these pictures, they give us images for moving forward. They question the narrative that we have accepted about the early 20th century in this region of the country. And not only that, there's the artistry of Hugh Mangum as a portraitist, but the fact, as Alex said, that the negatives themselves have a history of their own. They were stacked and stored for 5 decades, suffered disregard, damage, and time has passed and left its mark on these people's faces. So we are looking at them through this portal of time, some of quite traumatic damage, but then the damage adds this tremendous mystery and beauty to the images. So like the most enduring art, Mangum's art has evolved and absorbed meaning over time in ways that he could never have intended or expected. And that's what the most enduring art does.
And there's certainly something poetic in the idea of inspecting the effects of time on the artifact and then examining in our minds the effect of time on ourselves and our culture. But also there's something, and I think you suggested this earlier, about the fact that in his time and over time, people have recognized the importance of it. In other words, they made the effort to save it, however damaged they may have become. A lot of the other photographers, I'm sure, have been simply lost. So people in his time and beyond recognize the importance of this collection, right?
I think that's absolutely true. And interestingly enough, you know, Margaret Nygaard, who created the Eno River Association, and David Page, a local photographer, were the primary people who helped to save this work in the 70s. But those buildings out at West Point on the Eno, his family farm, were laid vacant for 7 or 8 years. I think people picked up some of the negatives in order to save them and took them away, neighborhood folks. And when Alex and I were working on this book in 2015, another 200 glass plate negatives turned up in people's attics and basements. And we were able to facilitate those being added to the collection at Duke. But there may be more yet to turn up. But people of his time, I think, didn't want this to be lost. Yeah. And then later, people who saw the value of these portraits made sure that they were salvaged. And then my students at Duke have looked into them, and we've done this book, and there will be more books done out of this archive.
And as you suggest also, that Hugh Mangum was extraordinary in that as a white man in those times, the turn of the 20th century and in the South, rendering African-Americans and other and women, all the people of all classes, genders, and races with the same dignity was unique in the South. But you've also said, I think you've both said this, Margaret, I'll ask you about it, that in many ways, Hugh Mangum is a product of Durham, uniquely a product of Durham, a unique city with a unique history.
I think so. In order to understand Hugh Mangum's photography, I needed to understand where this man came from with this sensibility. So though I live in Durham and have lived here for 35 years, I dove into the history of Durham and found out things that I never knew about Durham and also about the South, which made me question my own history education. But Durham has no, you know, antebellum history, no pre-Civil War history. It was just a depot, a convenient stop between Raleigh and Hillsborough in the 1860s. So after the Civil War, you get this burgeoning industry, tobacco industry, that grew overnight into an international industry. So the growth of factories, there are jobs, and there are five different railway lines converging in Durham. There's Hugh Mangum, born 1877, eight years after Durham was incorporated, on East Main Street. And his father has a business on Pettigrew Street. Pettigrew Street at that time was the one of the border streets of Hayti, the Hayti community, the African-American community here in Durham, which was thriving. You had a growing population of people who eventually millionaires. Pauli Murray grew up eventually in that community. So there was a lot of activism and pride. And Mangum, to walk to his father's place of business, would have gone directly into Hayti. So,
well, he lived on a border, and he went to a women's cemetery, so he's always crossing borders, right?
I think he, yes,
yeah,
he did.
And the city of Durham itself, as you said, without the same kind of commitment to white supremacy, having not been had an antebellum past, would look different, would feel different culturally. So all of those things,
right,
as you say,
and
crossroads.
Right, and I'm not saying that Durham wasn't immune to that, but it was actually
different.
Exceptional.
It was exceptional. I mean, I think that's the point. What do we learn, do you think, Alex, by looking at these photos and exhibiting them as we are now at the Nasher and including them in this book?
You know, I'm thinking about the day that Margaret describes where we go to the Nygaard's family home and hold the negatives up to the light and are looking at these faces for the first time in over 100 years and the pictures were made. And I think what we learned that day was the extraordinary individuality of people, that people then, when we looked at the individual expressions, they looked so much like the expressions were familiar. They looked so much like we feel like we do and our friends do. So we felt like we were looking at the past, but we were looking at the present as well.
And I think I said that there'll be an exhibit at the Nasher. In fact, you're going to be giving a talk and a book signing at the Nasher, but it's the book that we're talking about at the moment. What about working with these glass plates themselves? It seems to me that, you know, you sort of have to make some kind of artistic decisions on your own if you're going to make prints out of these and publish them, right? I mean, you can't, you know, sort of try to figure out what they would have looked like. So what kind of decisions did you have to make in creating your own prints from these plates?
First of all, we had to make the decision of, these were shot on black and white glass plates, but we saw the beauty of the way they'd aged in color. So the first decision we made is we're going to do these in color. We then looked at a range of prints and images from that era that were printed on the kind of paper that was available then to kind of establish a baseline tonality for the pictures. But then the thrill for me, akin to the thrill of seeing an image come up in the darkroom, and Margaret and I did this together, is you, with the scans that we had, once we saw the damage that was on the edges of the negatives, say A yellowing on the edge of a negative becomes a beautiful blue in the print. A red becomes a green in the print. And we allowed that color to play out in the image. So a lot of unexpected things happened, but we could not have done this without the latest 21st century technology. These are layered in so many ways. And my job and Margaret's job in rendering them was to make it appear that these aren't manipulated, but this is the way the light and time has affected this image.
So that's also encoded or embodied, the changes over time. And you say color, perhaps a listener might be thinking Technicolor. These are muted tones that are seen throughout various ranges of tone, but not bright reds and blues.
That's a really good point. I'm glad you said that.
How would you rate him as a photographer, just flat out as an artist? I mean, when you look at his work, I'll ask both of you. I'll stick with you, Alex, and then ask you, Margaret.
I would rate him with other American original photographers whose work has been discovered in the last 20, 30 years, from Michael Disfarmer in Arkansas or E.J. Belloc in New Orleans. And I would rate him that way because when Margaret and I edited his work, we found a kind of consistency of vision, a consistency of approach that was both complex and beautiful and mysterious. He evoked the mystery of life and the mystery that's within each individual.
Margaret, what would you say?
Well, I think there are other photographers whose work was discovered after they died who are now considered extraordinary contributions to the history of photography, and I think Mangum is one of them. I think it's his artistry, the simplicity of his approach. You could see, if you look at his work, where, in fact, an Avedon might have come from. Some of the work, partly because it's glass plate negatives, and reminds me of Sally Mann's work. You know, clearly Belloc's portraits of prostitutes that were done in Storyville, where what you see is not a prostitute, but a human being, whether they're clothed or not clothed.
Well, I was just going to say, and a Diane Arbus, those photographers who are able to take what they understand in the social order might be seen as an outcast. They understand intellectually that this
comparison
is how we're seen. And yet they, as individuals or they as artists, filter for that and say, but wait, I'm not going to see you that way. How can I take what I know to be an outsider and make you look like an insider, or make you look like the person you are from the inside?
Right. And not just outsiders. I mean, Washington Duke appears in his negatives, for instance. But I think the people in his pictures aren't defined by, say, their race, their gender, their age, the category, economic status. You see evidence of all of that in the pictures, very well described. The images are very sharp, but it's the person isn't the personality of the person is what dominates. That's what you see, which is why I compared him to Belloc, because again, whether those women are clothed or unclothed, they still come across as these really interesting personalities. And I don't know anyone else who's made nudes like that. But yeah, that's how I would describe Mangum.
Well, you can hear more when you talk about this at the Nasher, which is there will be an exhibition at the Nasher on view from January 19th to May 19th. And Margaret Sartor and Alex Harris are co-editors of the new book, Where We Find Ourselves, The Photographs of Hugh Mangum from 1897 to 1922, also curators of an exhibit at the Nasher by the same name. Thank you both for being here.
Thank you so much, Frank.
And as I said, they're going to be at the Nasher in Durham tomorrow for a gallery talk and a book signing. The exhibit at the Nasher is going to be on view from January 19th to May 19th. We have that information at our website, stateofthings.org. Just ahead, a planetary scientist takes us to Jupiter's volcanic moon, Io, and to the Kuiper Belt. We will also meet Ultima Thule. That all happens right here on a radio show. Believe it. Stay tuned.